or that one is necessarily going to have lots of awareness. And even if one can study, as I said, the awareness will arise when it's ready. And that doesn't have to be while you're studying. Some people say that they have a lot of awareness when they talk about Dhamma. When I'm in a discussion group, I find that I can have a lot of awareness. Or when they're studying their books, or when it's quiet. And it can be true for some people. But like me, for instance, I often find that in a Dhamma discussion, there may be less than at other times. And it can be like that too. Nobody knows when sati will arise, what will be the right moment. One would think there were more conditions when talking about Dhamma, but there doesn't have to be. Not at all.
So sati is when you're listening without already thinking about the answer when it's going to be to that study.
But
now it's a little bit easier to just listen without thinking about, you know, or one thought of Siddha, something you say is Siddha or something. And if I do, if there's awareness of thought, which prevents me from listening, then it stops. But very often, one goes on and on and on, and you haven't heard half the thing that you know.
And yet even listening very carefully and understanding clearly what he said and applying it to oneself still doesn't mean you have to have sati. But I'm talking now about knowing the characteristics which appear. Usually when I mention the word sati, I mean that. Knowing colour, sound, hearing, thinking, different realities as they are. And there's no reason why you should have more sati when you're hearing Dhamma than at other times. Different for everybody, because we're all different. We've all accumulated our sati, our banya, and our defilements, etc., differently. Right now, one person is seeing, another person is hearing, another person is having doubt, another person has some understanding, another person is liking what is heard, another person is disliking the pain through body sense. It's not that we just have the latent tendency to wrong view. We have the latent tendency to all defilements arise. It's there with or in every citta. It means the potential is there. When you talk about understanding that there is no self, I presume you are just talking about a type of thinking there. But even if we have a moment of awareness of a characteristic and banya sees that characteristic as it is, still there is the latent tendency toward wrong view if this first stage has not been reached. So as we practice the path, right up until the very last moment, right up until just before Makka Chitta experiences Nibbana for the first time, there's still a latent tendency there for doubt and wrong view and wrong practice. So that if one has very deep understanding and has passed through many different stages of insight, wisdom, but one dies before becoming Sotapanna, there may be conditions for one to be born in low, there will be conditions for one to be born in a lower plane. And one could be born again, anyway, as a human being in a situation where there were no conditions to hear Dhamma. So all one's latent tendencies are there, ready to be developed. It's through understanding now that we are training ourselves not to kill, training ourselves not to take things that don't belong to us, training ourselves in the way of Kusala, training ourselves to be more generous, and training ourselves to be aware. But it's only because we've heard and understood. And if at the end of this life we haven't reached that first stage of enlightenment, then we don't know where we'll be reborn, and we still have latent tendencies. So if we are reborn in a human plane, there's no reason why we might not be born in a situation where we don't hear Dhamma and where we have a drunk drunken parents, or very bad environments there. And then we could, but the point is, one is never safe until that first stage, because those latent tendencies are always there. So even if one has very high insight knowledge, one can still accumulate more defilement in another life, many, many, many other lives. So let's not waste our time.
Tamadil Adwat playing the 25th of November 2518.
Would anybody like to discuss what we're talking about now any further? Any aspects of what we are talking about? Little decision, medium decision, and big decision. The outcome.
A lot of people or the difficult to one people can determine all the direction of the life, for instance, for the kidney, the job.
Different sisters.
It's difficult because, yeah, maybe you said, oh, I want to be
different sometimes you think I'll be a bridge player, and then other days you're not interested in being a bridge player, perhaps you want to be a school teacher. Different sisters have different ideas at different moments because of different accumulations and different conditions. It's not one sister having different thoughts. One sister has one thought, one idea, then another sister has another thought. Experience is another object. Different conditions. Very natural, isn't it? It's not unusual for us to be like this, because we have had many different experiences in this life and in our other lives. We have accumulated many different tendencies, not all of them, shall we say, going in the same direction, perhaps. Some days we like to drink Coca-Cola, and other days we don't want to drink Coca-Cola. Different conditions. Something else appeals to us much more. Or maybe just something, maybe something we've eaten has done something to our mouth, and the thought of drinking Coca-Cola just, no. Many different conditions, not just Sutta, but Rupa too. And of course the different Sutta people. Sometimes certain kinds of food and certain kinds of taste make us want to have other tastes or not want to have other tastes. For example, cigarettes often condition the desire to drink alcohol or coffee. Drinking alcohol or coffee often conditions the desire to have a cigarette. These different tastes and experiences through tongue and nose and body seem to go together. For some people, not for everybody, of course. Sometimes somebody who doesn't smoke very much, or who's trying to stop smoking, if he's offered coffee after dinner, he'll want to have a cigarette immediately. But it just depends. If he's a smoker, sometimes if he's not feeling well, if he has a cold, he'll not want to smoke. It's not just citta which conditions his desire to smoke or not to smoke, it's rupa as well, in this instance. So many different conditions affecting us in so many different ways. Today at the university, one of the students, the day began with one of the students saying, "Now, how does everything get done? if there's no self. There must be something that keeps everything together, that directs all of this. All the different creatures, yoga creatures, and nature, something must say when to walk and the Kunshi King's reply was, I thought, very helpful. Nothing like I would have expected. My answer would have been a messy kind of answer. But Kunshi King just immediately started talking about why should there be anything supervising? And she explained how each characteristic of reality does its job and has its own function and its own characteristics. And it doesn't need anybody to tell it what to do. For example, she talked mainly about rupa. She said there is fire. Fire is hot. And fire burns. She said, can anybody go to a fire and say, now look here, don't you burn. Just you have a rest and don't you burn anything. Or, look here, fire. Be cold. Don't be hot, be cold. Fire is fire, it is the way it is, by conditions. And the idea of somebody having any control over it, or anything having any control over it, doesn't make sense. And the same applies to all the different types of citta and jetasika that arise too. Lopa is lopa. You cannot tell lopa not to like something. Lopa arises because of conditions and is attached. Now maybe that answer doesn't seem like it answers the man's question, but I think it answers the question better than the sorts of answers we might like to hear. Do you have any questions from what you've been studying in the book?
Yes. Yeah. Is your thinking always conscious?
Depends what you mean by thinking. I think this comes up almost every two or three nights. Because sometimes we use the word thinking to mean yes, having concept as object, sometimes. Just thinking stories. But sometimes we use it more widely, for example, to include thinking about a shape. Oh, well, that's a concept too, so that would go in the same category. Sometimes you take it further to mean any citta which is not the 10 citta of seeing, hearing, tasting, smelling, and touching. So then, sensual process. After seeing, we have receiving and investigating, determining, and then we have 7 dhavana citta. And we could say that those 7 dhavana citta think about the colour that is experienced through eye-door with lopa. So. Now, the object then would be colour. There is no story, there is no idea, the shape is not yet known, no name has yet been given. But if you want to distinguish those 7 moments from the scene that has taken place already, we might like to use the word thinking. Do you see what I mean? Because those pictures are... We often divide our nama into 6 categories, eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and mind. So that sometimes any citta which is not the citta of seeing, hearing, tasting, smelling, and touching, we think of as thinking, as a general word to describe those cittas which are not the other 10 of seeing, hearing, tasting, smelling, and touching. In all cases, the cittas can have anything as object, not only concept. Maybe sometimes we would think of pictures through the mind door as all being pictures which think because it is mind door process. Right? Not sense door process. But in fact through the mind door the objects can be anything. It can be nama, it can be rupa, it can be nibbana, it can be concept. But what word do we use for pictures in the mind door process? We don't use the word think. Even if the object is not a concept. So, it's just the way we use the language here.
the real purpose of thinking is not a concept in one of the places.
Depends what you mean by thinking. Because you're the person who determines the way the word is, what you mean by the word you're using.
So you see, when you're talking about the dog's breath, it's not really what I meant before, because I'm not aware of that process going on. I'm not aware of thinking.
And when does thinking take place? Thinking takes place in the Jhana process. What we usually mean by thinking. What is going on? No other moment can you think of stories other than in Jhavana process. No. It depends what you mean by thinking. If you use thinking in that way, then yes. The object must always be concept. Because you just said even thinking about reality is a concept. Yes, it is, if by thinking you mean having concept of object, which you do. But it's possible for thinking in the mind or process, performing the function of Jhavana, to have other objects besides concept. For example, I see now, or they're seeing now, and then after the sense door process has completely fallen away, there will be a mind door process in which color is still the object of citta, even though it has fallen away. Now the cittas in that mind or process, which have color as their object, how shall we describe them? What word would you use to describe those cittas? Would it be reasonable to say there are cittas which think about the color? It's not so bad, is it? But it's not the same as cittas which later on think about some story about what is seen. That's different again. So it depends on how you want to use the word thinking. It's up to each one of us to work out for ourselves how we are going to use these different words. I think usually when we talk about thinking, we do in fact mean the cittas which have stories and ideas as their object, usually. You can get used to the use of these different terms after a while. And you can always ask the person, what do you mean think about color? Do you mean think about the reality of color? Do you mean have color as object, or do you mean think something about color, or think about the idea of color? If you're confused, if somebody's using the word in a way that you can't understand, there seems to be some contradiction. You can always ask. Good thing too. Sometimes not. But at the moment, wide attention. That wide attention at that very moment, whether or not you, there are moments of expense passes or not. Or it could be shown, the way you describe it, it sounds like flickering. So it must be wise attention at that very moment. Never mind. Well, it depends on our accumulations as to when Gusala will arise and when it won't. What is most important is that we just become more and more familiar with these different realities as conditioned namas and rupas, and not trying to not think that the way to eradicate defilement is through some kind of control. Because I think we have the idea of working on ourselves at such moments of cultivating the gusala. I was just thinking of the strong understanding involved in trying to get rid of attachment and get rid of dosa and moha without learning to see all these realities as different types of nama and rupa, so that one can first of all get rid of one's wrong understanding. There's nothing wrong with cultivating as much gusala as one can of every type, but we mustn't lose sight of the aim. Otherwise, we'll just be stuck with, sounds funny, doesn't it? Stuck with dana, sila, and the theory. We won't develop the wisdom which is so necessary and so valuable. What kind of wise attention? Is wise attention with all gusala sittas? Can you make yourself have wise attention? What kind of wise attention? Wise attention at the level of sila? Wise attention at the level of thinking? Because wise attention at, when it is sati, satipatthana, is different from wise attention at other moments, at a higher level. How is it developing? You see, there is no Manisikara Patana. There's Mahasati Patana, but there is no Manisikara Patana. Nor is there any Ekakata Patana. Only Sati Patana. But it's a backbone to what? For what? If one doesn't have the right understanding of how sati is developed, it's the backbone for nothing. Because by practice I mean satipatthana, and anybody can have what you just described without having to have sati and banya. Why should one necessarily have to have sati and banya because one has dana and one has sila and one studies? Why should one have to have satipatthana because of that? Are they right? Do you have right understanding? Have you studied and studied and studied, but still not got the right understanding? Because it's possible, you know. We don't know what accumulations exactly we have developed over the years. Where, how much banya we have accumulated. How do we know how long it's going to take? For some of us, maybe it's a matter of many, many, many years before we start to sort out the characteristic of sati. Nobody knows where we, at what stage we reached in the past before we were born in this life and heard the Dhamma again. We're not all at the same point. That would be impossible. So there's no automatic bit of skill and a bit of wisdom in carrying on studying, and everything will work out. One has to talk and understand clearly, more and more clearly, what it means to have right understanding. Otherwise, one might wrongly understand that one already has right understanding. Then we will not be conditioned for more development of right understanding. Since it's been mentioned today that someone who knows, now I don't want to discourage you, it should encourage you, not discourage you. Someone who knows, who has been going to, who has been listening to the program on the radio, the implication was without a break, but I guess there must have been 2 days off corona or something here and there. But the last 10 years, the program has been on the radio for 10 years, morning and evening, day after day, almost 365 days of the year. This woman has recorded all these programs. Since it's been said just today, I think it was, that this woman came to her and said, I am just beginning to understand what Satipatthana means. 10 years of listening and recording, listening over and over again. Just beginning to understand what Satipatthana means. Maybe 10 years is a short time for some of us. We don't know how much listening we've got to do, how much talking, how much consideration and what have you, has to be given to. I am just beginning to understand what Satipatthana means. 10 years of listening and recording, listening over and over again. Just beginning to understand what Satipatthana means. I don't think we can say that Sati is a power yet. So we're much more likely to be deceiving ourselves than to be aware and understanding. It's natural. Otherwise, what one will do is one will just read and read all day and study and come back quite clever, especially if one has a good memory. But all the time one's reading, one will not realize that there are different moments and different realities while you're reading. Or you might think that you do know, but who knows whether in reality there is truly Satipatthana or not. Like, you might have been taught one of these methods of naming. So you might sit here and read and in between find yourself sort of naming the scene, thinking. You might think that's Satipatthana. I don't think you're surprised here very much, but Satipatthana doesn't come automatically with Dusala and Dhamma study. It's true that Dhamma study and Dusala are, Dhamma study is essential to hear the Dhamma, study the Dhamma, is essential condition, but it depends on the strength of our Sati and Banya from the past as to how quickly Sati, the characteristic of Sati will be learned and understood. And there must be lots of moments of doubt and wrong understanding in between, because that's what the path has been developed for, to eradicate doubt and wrong understanding. If you didn't have any, there wouldn't be a path to develop. So there have to be moments when you think you're practicing in the right way, but you're not. There have to be. And there can be awareness of those moments too, because they are real, they are reality.
Yes, thank you. That's the right way, but you're not.
I said, there have to be moments when we think we are practicing the right way, but in reality we aren't.
So that must be happening all the time now, in the beginning. And where it goes by most of the time.
And it can be so subtle that we may see those moments and think that that is wrong view and say, oh, wrong practice. We think that we are being aware of wrong practice, and in fact, we are just clinging to our wrong view at those moments and having wrong view about the wrong view. For example, thinking that I have wrong view, or that is my wrong view. But in reality, it's only wrong view. It isn't mine or yours or anybody's. So one may think one is very clever, that I know I've got wrong view. I know I have wrong practice. But do you see the characteristic of wrong view, or do you mistakenly have, do you have the wrong understanding that you have wrong view? I think our Galatians are extremely clever.
Coming now at what time? The 23rd of November, 25, 18.
Samatata is Jyotisika, Sakal Rupas, Nibbana. But Nibbana is not a Kanda. Nibbana is not Rupa, Nibbana is not Sanya, Nibbana is not feeling, Nibbana is not the other 50 Jyotisikas, Nibbana is not consciousness. So in fact, the Tathas and the Kandas are not exactly the same. Because the Tathas are three paramattha, four paramattha dhammas, and the Kandas are three. No Nibbana. Nibbana is Kanda freed. Kanda vimutti. No, it is not a Kanda. So when you do, you can do exercises like this, and it helps you sometimes to get a clearer idea of different realities and their functions. It's only in theory, but it's good to have the right theory in your mind and not the wrong theory. Remember the right classification and not the wrong classification. To be able to remember some of this is supposed to be a help, not a hindrance. But one doesn't have to know it all, of course. Just enough to start getting things straight. To know that there are different types of realities that appear through different doorways. Can there be some understanding now of different realities through different doorways? There can be some. Now there may be hearing, and now there may be seeing. Different moments. You cannot see the sound that you hear now. Naturally, you might think. Sound is not a person. We forget that when we hear somebody saying unpleasant things to us. We think, he said that, but it was only sound, arising and falling away. We feel unhappy because we have accumulated a lot of dosa. When we feel unhappy, does it help us? Does it help the dog? Does it help the man who is kicking the dog? But if we have compassion, it certainly helps us, and it helps other people too. Because if we have dosa, unhappiness, we accumulate it. The more we accumulate dosa, the more conditions there are for us to kick dogs, true. Or maybe we don't think we will ever kick dogs, but we may shout at people instead and say, don't kick that dog. Yeah? So the man is unkind to the dog, and then you are unkind to the man. And then he doesn't like me to be unkind to him. So he gets angry at you, and then fight, maybe. I don't know. Some people think that if you see things as they really are, you will be very cold and unkind. You think, what do you mean it's only color? It's a dog, or it's only sound. It's a man. Is that true? What I mean is, if we realize that it's only color, will that make us cold and unkind and unfeeling and unhelpful? To see things as they really are means more conditions for kindness, compassion, and dukkha than ever before. Understanding eliminates the ignorance that makes us unhappy and cruel and selfish, so that we have just unhappiness and sadness and grief instead of compassion, and just attachment instead of kindness. I would say develop a community at that moment. If you are faced with people who feel very, very strongly about things like that, otherwise you might get very upset in trying to explain things to them. Well, you could explain to him that the sound you heard is conditioned by citta. It's true. It's not the sound of the wind, or the sound of a rock falling, or the sound of a tape recorder. So we can help them a little bit here and there. For example, we can explain that what we call the sound of a dog is sound that is conditioned by citta. There is a difference between hearing a dog screaming and hearing a car go past. In reality, it's just sound. But the sound that conditions the dog howling, what conditions the dog howling is citta. What conditions the car is only temperature, the sound of the car. So there are different realities, but citta is not a dog either. What you see is only color. And citta, which conditions the color that you saw, that's not a dog either. This kind of talk right now may not be very helpful, because it depends on the accumulations of the person you're talking to, and there's no rule for what you say when somebody says, but it's a dog. Because you have to know what else that person has said, and what level of understanding he has about what. Is he a person who has very, very strong attachment to different wrong views? If so, maybe you shouldn't be talking to him at all. Or maybe you have to back off. But if it's a person you feel is genuinely wanting to know more about the truth, there are things that can be said, but we may not always remember them either. So again, we may have to have equanimity if we cannot think of what is a useful thing to say at that moment. We cannot control. It's dukkha and it's a kind of samatha, because if we don't have equanimity, we may have dosa when we cannot think how to explain. And when we have dosa, we don't know what might happen. It might condition us to even get impatient and a little bit angry with that person, and start to argue and say, I'm sorry, it's not a dog, it's just color. And I can't tell you why, but you have to believe me. And then that person may feel, well, that's Buddhism, no thank you. So equanimity then would be a good thing to have. We might just say that you don't know how to explain. It may be a little bit foolish, but it's better than getting angry or frustrated. It's very difficult for people to understand about compassion and kindness, etc., when dealing with different beings, because most of us don't really know very much about kindness and compassion. We mix them up with grief and attachment. It says in the Visuddhimagga that grief and compassion are near enemies.
which means you have both together, hard on the heels of each other, close together, and they're all mixed up. So we don't know what's going on, what's what. We may see a dog in great pain, and we may have some moments of genuine compassion, but lots and lots of moments of sadness, with unpleasant feelings. So far, who can separate them? And since there's probably more sadness than compassion, we may think that to have compassion, you must feel a bit unhappy too. Otherwise, it's not real compassion. But that's not true, because unhappiness doesn't ever arise with compassion, with kusala. It's so hard for us to see these characteristics clearly. And we may have... there is a reality called mukhita, which is to rejoice in somebody else's good fortune. But we get it mixed up with its near enemy, which is attachment. So that if some people who live in your street, if their son wins a scholarship, maybe you don't know that family very well. You don't know their son. But if you know about mukhita, you may rejoice for his happiness to have received that gain. That is different from the kind of feeling you feel when your own son gets a scholarship. It's very easy to rejoice when your own boy, my boy, gets a scholarship. Because then it's not really rejoicing, it's nearly all just attachment. But to feel that a rejoicing for people that mean nothing to you, that are not close to you, when they have gained, that's hard, and that's the reality of mukhita. And we get the two very, very mixed up. So it's not easy to know what is kusala and what is agusala. That's why people think if you don't have a tear in your eye, or feel a little bit of sadness, or feel a little bit upset, then it can't be true compassion. But of course, those moments of tearfulness and unhappiness, they don't help anybody at all. They may just be conditioned for other people to feel worse. And if your sadness gets out of hand, you may cause trouble to others. They might have to help you along and sit you down and wipe your face and do the cooking and sweep the house because you're just leaving away all day. When it gets really bad. And you're just a nuisance then. Compassion does not incapacitate us. Compassion makes it possible for us to act in a compassionate way. To actually do something to relieve the suffering of others, if it's possible, rather than just think, now somebody should do something and get upset. Like, compassion could motivate us to talk to the man who's kicking the dog and explain to him that the kind of citta he has at that moment is dangerous for him. To be cruel to living beings is a level of gamma, and it must bring an unpleasant result. And if the person who's kicking the dog is someone we feel we can talk to a little bit, and why not, some very nice people kick dogs, it may be a friend of ours. We may be able to take that person aside, talk to him about cause and result. That would be compassion. But to go in there and pick up the stick and say, now how would you like to be kicked like this dog? Somebody might think that's compassion, but that's just agusala. It's not compassion for anybody. You're not helping the dog in any way whatsoever by picking up the stick and getting angry at the man. Or sometimes we might just go over there and hands on our hips and look at him and just say something a little bit sarcastic or just glare, you know, and have a big frown so he can see that we care. That's not compassion either. Just more dosa. So we have to know about realities in greater and greater detail. Compassion doesn't mean you must get up and run around and do things. You can have compassion without it conditioning any action through the body or any speech. And this is when we say it is most definitely samatha. A level of samatha. It's not sila. Sila is action through body or speech. For example, you see the man kicking the dog. Through your understanding, you may immediately have compassion for that man. He doesn't know what he's doing. He doesn't realize what result it's going to bring. It's through his lack of understanding that he is doing this very foolish and dangerous thing. You may have compassion for the dog, in that you would like to alleviate its suffering. However, you feel that maybe there's nothing you can do under the circumstances. Although if you have some medicine or some skill, you may be able to do something for the dog as well. But you may not have any medicine or any skill, or enough time because of your attachment. But you can have a moment of compassion without doing or saying anything. And by accumulating compassion in this way, one can do more and more and more, because one little moment of compassion is better than all the sadness in the world. It may be weak, or conditions might not be possible for us to do anything at all that is helpful. Like the man might be a man who gets very, very angry very easily, and we might know that it's very foolish to try to talk to him. He will just have more dose of whatever we say. He won't want to listen. So no matter how much compassion we might have, and no matter how much skill we might have in explaining things to people, there are times when equanimity is better, when we should keep quiet, when people don't want to hear and won't listen, and maybe just think, who are you?